This episode is brought to you in part by the American Homebrewers Association, organizers of Big Brew for National Homebrew Day, which is Saturday, May 4th. Celebrate the best hobby there is. Find a Big Brew event near you at homebrewersassociation.org. That's homebrewersassociation.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, April 25th, 2019. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Steve Wilkes of stevesbrewshop.com, and I taste hop sampler number 9, Galena, Denali, and Eldorado. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows, our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear, including our tie-dye silicone pint and our brewing rainbow shirt. And big news on the BasicBrewingShop.com front. I'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com. And we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. And if you do us the favor of rating us on iTunes and maybe leaving a nice comment, they say that that will help new listeners to find us. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. And supporters this past Friday got an early release of our Basic Brewing video episode featuring my Instant Pot IPA, along with a behind-the-scenes video and a recipe. This time, the behind-the-scenes video is a lot more extensive than the general release video, because you get to see all of my course corrections as I was brewing this beer. The Instant Pot didn't perform as I anticipated, so I had to kind of improvise a few times. And when you watch the public version of the episode, you'll see the B-roll, or the cover video that I insert of the brew day, you know, with no sound from that. Well, the behind-the-scenes video is that B-roll, all of it, or most of it, with the audio intact. So you kind of get a play-by-play of the brew day as I go along. So if you want to see me mess up a couple of times, that's a good way to do it. More self-promotion. Some of you have discovered that the new BasicBrewingShop.com has been rolled out. It's live at BasicBrewingShop.com, of course. A couple of notes. If you created an account on the old site, you'll have to create a new one just because of the way the transition happened. The good news is it only takes a couple of minutes. And if you don't want to create an account, we're trying something out. If you don't want to create an account, you don't have to. You can make a purchase as a guest. So you won't have access to your purchase history and such as that as, you know, if you had created an account. But you will get to make the purchase a little quicker. The site uses PayPal, but you can use a credit card and not have a PayPal account. And it's mobile friendly, so we're into the 21st century here. Also, I'm selling the DVD combo with all of our DVDs and a free bottle opener for a new low price. So head on over to BasicBrewingShop.com if you still have an optical device. And sorry it's taken us so long to get the store back up and running. So hopefully it will be running well for all of you. And give us feedback to let me know how the show is running. The orders are going out the door, so I know that, you know, it's working in that way. But I want to know about your user experience as well. There's some fun news from our friends and sponsor, Imperial Organic Yeast. Casey from Imperial says, A43 Loki, you asked 200 billion times and we listened. Imperial is happy to announce that A43 Loki is joining the year-round core strain lineup. Available to both home and professional brewers starting now, or actually starting a few weeks ago. A43 Loki is a Voss Kvik, is it Kvik or Vike strain known for its versatility and wide fermentation range. Ferment anything from pseudo lagers to double dry hopped IPAs at temperatures ranging from 65 degrees Fahrenheit to 100 degrees Fahrenheit. At the lower end of the spectrum, expect A43 Loki to be super clean, producing little to no esters. And at the higher end of the range, it tends to produce tons of fruity citrus characters. So, also, AO5 Voyager Imperial's Spring Seasonal is available now through the end of May. AO5 Voyager is a strain originally from England and plays nicely in both malt-forward styles as well as hop-forward styles. Fairly flocculent, good attenuation, and lovely ester profile that can be manipulated by temperatures. It makes this strain a go-to for any warmer weather, spring-inspired beer. So that sounds like fun. So ask your local homebrew store about A43 Loki and AO5 Voyager. And remember, Imperial Organic Yeast has the highest pitch rate of any liquid yeast producer, 200 billion cells. As I say, my stir plate is dusty because they don't make starters anymore for standard gravity 5-gallon batches. It's great stuff. Imperial Organic Yeast. Let's take a look into the mailbag. I've been getting notes and letters similar to this one from Christian in Sweden. Christian says, I just watched your video on the no-chill steam beer, or I call it a Helles, and wondered why not put a lid with an airlock and pitch the yeast straight into the no-chill container after the wort reaches the desired temperature, of course. That way, the fermenting vessel would be sanitized by the hot wort and make brew day even less work. Here in Sweden, the basic fermentation vessel is a food-safe plastic bucket that can handle boiling temperatures, so I'm tempted to give it a try. Do you see any obvious downside to this? Thanks, Christian. As I've said, I've gotten a few comments and letters similar to this. I think as long as your fermenter can handle the heat, I don't see a reason why you couldn't put the hot wort right in there and wait for it to cool and then pitch your yeast. You don't want to do it with glass. Do not do it with glass. A glass carboy will likely shatter instantly if you put boiling hot wort into it. I've received a comment from a brewer who racks hot wort into a stainless steel fermenter, lets it cool there, and then pitches. So I don't ferment in my no-chill container for a few reasons. I like fermenting in glass or transparent plastic because I like to see what's going on. I'm just that kind of a guy. And also, I think if I fermented in my no-chill container, it would make it more difficult to clean all that fermentation gunk. And there is an advantage to pouring from the no-chill container to the carboy in that the wort gets more oxygen when you pour from one vessel to another. But that's just my preference, and I might change my mind later. But I would be happy to hear from any no-chill brewers who have anything to add on that. Michael from Overland Park, Kansas writes, I've never brewed before. I recently bought a bunch of brewing supplies secondhand. It came with a jug of liquid malt extract and vacuum-sealed hops. Basically, I've got all the ingredients for a simple ale recipe. Problem is, I know that the ingredients are over a year, maybe 2 or 3 years old. On one hand, I can get 5 gallons of beer for the price of a yeast packet. On the other hand, I don't want 5 gallons of bad beer. Should I go ahead and get some fresh stuff, or do you think it's worth trying to get something drinkable out of these ingredients? Well, Michael, congratulations on getting into the obsession, hobby. Think of brewing ingredients as food, because they are. Liquid extract is going to stale, hops will degrade. You shouldn't risk having your first homebrewing experience end up with an undrinkable, questionable, possibly nasty beer. After all that work, you want your first batch to be something you can enjoy and enjoy sharing with your friends. You know, there's nothing like brewing up a batch of beer and taking that first sip and thinking, wow, I made this. Get thee to your local homebrew store, Michael, and pick out a fresh ingredient kit and have fun. And hope it's the first of many successful, delicious batches of beer. Speaking of local homebrew shops, our friends and sponsors Desiree and Dave of High Gravity in Tulsa will be having a beer festival right outside their front door. It's the Tulsa Craft Beer Invitational, and it's going to be Saturday, May 11th, there in the parking lot at High Gravity. VIP passes will get you in at 1 o'clock and general admission 2 o'clock. The event lasts until 5, and you'll get to sample rare beers and one-offs from commercial breweries and home brewers. So it's not just an ordinary beer festival where you get the stuff you can get at the local, you know, local liquor store all the time. And if you get a VIP ticket, you get to vote on, you know, they have a competition in connection with the festival. So more than 30 Oklahoma breweries will be represented. And I've convinced my wife, Susan, to drive me over there. So I'm planning to do interviews while I'm sampling. Should be a great time. You can find out more and get tickets at beerfests.com. Just search for Tulsa when you go to beerfests.com. And while you're physically in person at High Gravity, you can, of course, check out all the amazing Warthog electric brewing gear in person. High Gravity takes the pain out of propane with electric brewing. I love my High Gravity Warthog system, and I hear from listeners frequently who have taken the plunge into electric brewing, I hope not literally, with a system from High Gravity. You can also sample beers there from Pippin's Tap Room, which have been brewed on a Warthog setup there at High Gravity. Check it all out at highgravitybrew.com and use the promo code EBC75BB to save $75 off your electric gear purchase. highgravitybrew.com. Okay, I hope you're enjoying the Hop Sampler series as much as I am. This is number nine, I believe. Steve and I sampled Galena, Denali, and El Dorado. Well, Steve Wilkes, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks, James. It's a pleasure to be back.
In the background, you might be able to hear the air conditioning here in the studio because it's starting to get warmer.
No kidding. It was like 80 degrees today, and which doesn't sound very hot, but it feels hot after winter.
Yeah.
And there's more pollen in the air than you can shake a stick at.
I tried that to get rid of it. It didn't work. So here we are with Hop Sampler number nine. Block that kick. If you play this episode backwards, it means a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Starting off with the obscure cultural references already, because this is, we shot three video shows before we were coming into this. So
yeah, that's right. So good luck out there.
Hang on tight.
Hang on.
Okay, so this time we're talking about Galena, or is it Galena?
I say Galena because Galena, Kansas is very near here.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll say El Dorado, since El Dorado, Arkansas is not too far.
There's a theme.
So, and then Denali, I guess, is just Denali.
Well, it's, you know, Denali National Park in Alaska, which is a long ways away, but still, this is a geographically centered hop sampler.
Now, is that the one that they changed the name of Mount McKinley to Denali? Is that the one?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So, my wife, Susan, sitting here, nodding her head. She's our technical advisor and our fact checker.
Yes.
But she doesn't want to take part in the tasting because she's drinking the Helles out of my keg. So to speak.
I've always admired her for that.
The Helles is right up her alley as far as the tasting is concerned. It's a nice, clean beer and crystal clear and drinkably delicious. All right. So I told you before we'd get started that I would talk about hop stand bittering units one more time, and then, because it's just crazy, this whole trying to get a handle on bitterness added, hops added after the boil, and trying to get a handle on the bitterness that that they contribute during a hop stand. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know why I thought you might have something.
Well, it is crazy. I mean, yeah. It is. Yeah, just keep going.
Okay, so, but we have to thank Ken from Kentucky. Listener Ken from Kentucky, the easiest listener name to remember probably ever.
Yep.
So, listener Ken from Kentucky, a few weeks ago, listened to the episode with David Curtis from Bell's Brewing and said, hey, I ran some numbers on after your show through Beersmith, because Beersmith has a section where it measures IBUs with using hop stand additions. So I had him use his instead of purchasing the software from Brad Smith. Sorry, Brad, we love you. But and thanks, Ken, for doing the work for us. But okay, so you want to hear some numbers?
Sure.
Here's some numbers thrown out to you. He ran the numbers for the beers in the Centennial episode, where I can compare. We compared Bell's Centennial against regular Centennials. It predicted that using the hops that we did and the way that we did, the IBUs would be 40.3 on those beers. Okay, 40.3. They actually were on the Bell's, it was 45.4, and the other one was 47.6. So not too far.
Yeah,
it's within within, say, you know, six or eight.
Yeah.
IBUs, which is, it's in the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
So then I gave him the figures for the flight that we did with Amarillo, Falconer's Flight, and Willamette. And the numbers that he came up with, or the number that he came up with, was 23.6 IBUs.
Predicted on Beersmith.
Predicted on Beersmith.
Okay.
The actual retail price, no, the actual IBU numbers for those three, Amarillo was 42.5, Falconer's Flight was 34.4, and Willamette was 31.1. So that's a bit different.
That's way different, yeah.
Now, here's the interesting part. I also gave him the figures for Nelson Savin, Motueka, and Rocco, or maybe it's Rocco. But it's not Raquel, which is what we say up here.
Well, I was always Raquel Welch.
It's Rucko Welch.
Okay,
so anyway, I gave him the figures from that. Beersmith predicted 56.9 IBUs. Nelson Savin weighed in at 56.8.
On prediction?
No, on the actual measurement.
Oh.
So it was only a tenth of a point away from accurate on that one.
Wow.
But on that same round, the Motueka was 37.4, and the Rocco was 38.1.
Hmm.
So I don't know what to think. It's just all over
it's
all over the map.
Yeah, I don't know what to think either.
If the only data point that we had was the Nelson Savin, we would think that Beersmith was genius and it was completely accurate all the time. But we've got all these other data points that either it's the software that doesn't know what's or that doesn't have it exactly right, or it's the condition of the hops that are not exactly right, or maybe the numbers on the package weren't exactly right. You know, there's so many variables that I just find it frustrating, and I just want to stop thinking about the numbers and just start. Go back to talking about the tasting and our sensory input.
Well, I agree with that, and I agree with it from the standpoint of how I brew, which is the numbers matter a little bit, but what really matters is does it taste good?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if it doesn't fit in my spreadsheet just right, I don't really care about that. I do care about whether it tastes good or not. But that means that if you're going to brew, say, with hop stand, you're probably going to have to brew a few times to dial it in. It's like being a musician or an artist. You don't paint one painting. You don't, you know, record one song. You go back over and over and over. And eventually, even though you can't quantify it in an Excel spreadsheet, you know what's right.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of think that's how I brew. Now, I realize that that's going to... There's a whole other part of the brewing community that will go, that's just nuts. You just can't make good beer that way. But I think that worrying too much about whether it's 48 IBUs or 52 IBUs or 37 IBUs, that's not really the point. Does it taste good?
And experience, your own experience,
yeah.
I think. So, and just as an aside, I might be able to hear your rustling the paper. It's okay. I'm going to cut that part.
I'm doing some origami over here on the side.
Well, I was going to cut that out, but now I'm not.
I've got a swan going right now.
Is that what that is?
We'll be... Hermione Granger's off here. She's going to She's going to animate it, and it'll fly around. Thank you, Hermione.
Okay, I'm leaving that in now. Okay. Okay, so what I did this time is I just added half an ounce of each of this.
Okay.
Or 14 grams. So half an ounce or 14 grams of Galena at 16% alpha acid, the same amount of Denali at 15.4, and half the same amount of El Dorado at 12.8. So they're still in the ballpark.
Yeah, they're very close. Yeah. Okay.
So for those of you not familiar with the hop sampler, we're doing a blind tasting. We don't know which beer is which. And the recipe is 1 pound or 450 grams of Pilsen light dry malt extract and 3 quarts of water in each of these batches. And I just brought that mixture up just to the boil. And then once it started boiling, I shut off the heat, added the hops, let it stand on the stove for 30 minutes to do a hop stand. And then I chilled it and added 3 grams of US-05 into the fermenter. And then when I bottled with each of those carbonation drops in each bottle.
Nice. You got those from Timothy Leary, didn't you?
That explains a lot. I got those from Steve's Brew Shop.
Yes, that's right.
.com.
That's the reserve stock.
So what we're going to do is we're going to taste these 3 batches of beer, and then randomly we're going to read descriptions of the 3 okay. hops, and then we're going to try to match up at the end to see if we can figure out what's what.
Yeah.
So here we go. This is the 9th time that we've done this. And I think this is a fun and worthwhile experiment.
It definitely is. I've really enjoyed doing these. It's a great way to learn a little bit about the hop, just to get familiar with it. It's definitely helped me. I mean, even in my store, when folks ask me about them, I may or may not have brewed with half of these, but at least now I've had a way to see what they're like.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we have been able to pick out favorites.
Yeah.
So why don't we taste beer number one.
Number one.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Clunk. Plastic cups from Dollar General. Mm. Very, I'm going to step right out there and say very melony.
Yep.
I get a little bit of even like a watermelon kind of a thing going on.
Yeah. It's a little bit slightly tart, and so the watermelon, that soft melon, soft fruit flavor, I almost get a little stone fruit too, but I almost think that could be as much from the grain. I'm not sure about that. That's a very subtle flavor, but what I really pick up is just a nice, soft, very ripe fruit hop character out of that.
Yeah, it's not what I would describe as a ton of grapefruit. And that we've gone back to last time we did the Vienna extract, right?
Yeah.
And now we're back to Pilsen Light. I still haven't solved the head problem on the beers, but I think that is the cleaning detergent that I use, I think, on the jugs, the fermenters, and so stay tuned on that. We're figuring that out. I'll let you know when we... I don't want to spend a lot of time on that, but I'll let you know when we're figuring out. The big batches are still, that I do still have excellent head retention and formation and everything. It's just the small batches, so it's just a detective game, narrowing it down. Okay, so hop... We got the first 2 descriptions are from hopslist.com. So what's our first hop descriptor?
Galena.
All right.
Okay, so here's the official description from hopslist.com. Super Alpha Galena is one of the most widely used bittering hop varieties in the U.S. and is also an excellent dual-use hop. Galena's fruity flavor profile really kicks with clean and agreeable notes of citrus. Some brewers have noted it's better when boiled in smaller quantities, and that later additions bring forth stronger aromas of black currant.
Ooh. Now, what is black currant? Is that like a grape?
No, that's my creek out back. It's a little polluted. It's got black current.
It's downstream from the sewage plant.
Yeah. No, I, you know, a currant is a berry, I think. Honestly, I'm not sure, but I think it's a berry. It's kind of a European thing.
I've heard wines being described as, you know, currant flavor aroma.
Yeah. It's like a little raisin.
Okay.
When you get currants, they're like little, little raisins.
All right. Well, there you go.
So, okay. directly descended from Brewer's Gold, Galena was brought about via open pollination. It was officially selected in 1968 by agricultural scientist Richard R. Romanko in the state of Idaho. Interesting. Commercially, Galena is most noted for its purported use as the only hop in... Just guess.
I copied and pasted that. I've already read it, so I know.
Well, okay.
So everybody out there, just guess.
Just guess.
Keep it in your mind.
Yeah.
And the answer is?
Corona Export.
Huh.
I didn't know there were hops in Corona.
I
just thought it was...
Is that the name of the regular Corona?
Yeah, I think it is.
Corona Export?
Yeah, and then Corona Lights, the lighter version.
Okay, well, there you go.
Huh. Interesting. Wow. I like Galena, actually.
It doesn't taste like lime.
No, well, it comes later. It comes out with the tamale spread.
No, for years I thought Corona tasted like lime because, you know, the waiter always stuck a lime straight into the top of the bottle.
Got to do that. All right. Well, number one is nice. I think it's a very tasty beer. I drink it.
Yeah. 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 Very fruity. Mm-hmm. Like I said, Melanie. All right. So we go into tasting beer number two.
Number two.
Clunk.
I like that too.
It's different.
It's quite different. I think the flavor is a little brighter. The hop character is a little brighter. Brighter. But it's still kind of melony. I still get kind of a soft, ripe fruit character from it.
But I do get more citrus in this one.
Yeah, I do too. But I don't get grapefruit. Mm-hmm. I get more like maybe tangerine.
Yes.
Okay. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah. We're in the same. I was going to say that.
Yeah. But not kumquat. Because you know what kumquat.
That's just a funny name.
Yeah, you got to say kumquat.
It's very fruity, more toward the citrusy side, but not leaning toward a grapefruit, more like a tangerine, some a more mellow kind of citrus fruit, not orange.
No.
But tangerine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a little cutie.
It's the Herb Albert tangerine.
That's right.
It's,
tangerine.
I'm doing the. You should be doing the drum part.
Well, I don't do that.
Okay, randomly selected hop number two, also from hopslist.com.
Which is El Dorado, or El Dorado if you're from Arkansas.
That's right.
El Dorado, because I'm from Colorado, is a relatively new kid on the block. Well, that just ruins it for me right there. Because I didn't like those guys. Created by Moxie Valley... New kid on the block at Moxie Valley. I love that. Created by Moxie Valley based CLS Farms in 2008, it was released to the public in 2010. A product of the Yakima Valley's cooler climate, it features a uniquely fruity flavor profile in addition to desirable bittering and aromatic properties. High vigor, high alpha acids, lots of oils and resins, good storage stability, and an exceptional yield also make this, on paper at least, an outstanding commercial variety. It exhibits bold tropical fruit flavors, said to be reminiscent of pineapple and mango, in addition to a resinous back note. On the nose...
It's a little too on the nose.
Yeah, on the nose, it imbues aromas of pear, watermelon, stone fruits, and even candy. It's kind of making me think we've had this. To date, it has been used in wheat beers, pale ales, and IPAs. So there you go. I actually started carrying it because it was popular. It is popular in New England IPAs.
Ah, there you go.
So, interesting.
Oh, and speaking of your shop.
Okay.
It's time for the shameless plug.
Well, yeah.
So this week, during the month of April, it's your lawnmower series.
Oh, yeah. So the, yeah, we've got this great series of American pale ales. They go from light to heavy, or low gravity to high gravity. We've got the Pushmore Blonde for you folks with small yards. Then the Lawn Tractor American Pale Ale, if you've got a little bit bigger yard. And then there's the Zero Turn IPA when you've got to really get down with it. And then if you've got to get jiggy with it completely, you can go on to the Double IPA Brush Hog Double IPA. And they're the same family of beers, and they're 25% off. And I've got them in, I've got them in extract or all grain kits. And you can go onto my website, stevesbrewshop.com, and check them out. They're just nice American style pale ales. They're not crazy beers, but they're good beers. And they've been very popular at the store for quite a while. And I thought I'd put them on sale because everybody's mowing the yard now.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And I can vouch for Steve. He is one heck of a recipe putter together.
That's on my certificate. It's on my business card.
You do very, very well. You can really knock together a recipe. Okay, so that's it. stevesbrewshop.com.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, so we're done with the tasting of one and two, and we're done with the descriptor of hop, randomly hop, selected hop.
Do you have a favorite between one and two? I do.
I kind of like number one. I kind of like that watermelon-y thing going on.
I like number two.
Oh, well, there you go.
They're both nice, though.
And we're both right.
Yeah, we're both right.
Okay, let's taste number three.
Okay.
We're on to number three. Number three. Susan, is this entertaining at all?
No, not really.
It's not even a little bit. I'm even bored.
She's, you can go get another beer from the kegerator if you want. She's got a dog in her lap. Okay, number three. Oh, my.
That's good.
Okay. That's the most, kind of the bitterest to me so far and kind of the sharpest.
Yep. It's just more in your face. It's just a little bit more over the top than the other two. I quite like it. You know, all these beers are kind of one-dimensional, and they should be. They're supposed to be. But of the three, well, I mean, I would, you know, if you just poured me a pint of any one of these, I'd be like, that's a good beer.
Yeah.
But I really, now number three is my favorite.
Yeah, number three has more of a, kind of a solid backbone of bitterness. It's, it is more kind of hoppy. I mean, in a traditional way. You know, the other two were very hop forward in that their flavors and aromas were very fruity and just, you know, like really intense as far as the flavors that they were. But this is like, it brings some bitterness. It brings a little more, it brings a bit more of that grapefruity and piney thing.
Yeah, it just seems like a beer that is more suited to doing a smash beer. It's a more complex flavor. There's layers of astringency, there's layers of bitterness, there's layers of flavor, more complete, for lack of a better word, than the other two.
Yeah, it's more complete. It's not as one note as the other two. Yeah, I like it quite a bit.
Yeah, me too.
I'm going to take another sip. But there is some tropical fruit in there in the background. There's some grapefruitiness. There's like a background bitterness that complements it as well. It's just more rounded, more complex, more layered, a lot more stuff going on.
And the beer, the totality of the beer, so including the malt, it seems to be in better balance with itself.
Yeah.
So that could also be a function of the IBUs. It could, you know, there's, who knows what.
Yeah.
But of the three, that one is the most complete beer. And again, I'm getting all those flavors. I'm getting tropical fruit. Well, I don't need to re-say that.
Yeah. Oh, good. Okay.
Okay.
So the third randomly said. Now, the third, I had to kind of compile stuff. I added some stuff together HopsList.com did not have an entry for Denali. So I had to go to Hopsteiner.com. And Hopsteiner, I think, may be the breeder of Denali. It's less complete, the description that we have here, but there you go.
Okay, so Denali. Aroma, colon.
Oh, no, I don't get as much colon as I would think in any of these beers.
I got a note from my doctor. You know my doctor, Dr. Vinny Boomba.
There was some colon aroma in here before, but Susan's smiling at that. Yeah. We entertained Susan briefly.
Aroma. Pineapple, pine nuts, and citrus. Genetic origin, 50% Nugget, 25% Zeus, 25% USDA 19058M.
I think it might stand for male.
Oh, yeah, okay. I'll go with that. With gigantic cones. I think you blew it on the mail call. Giant tracts of land.
Huge tracts of land.
I can't get this in focus. Have you got a baboon in your pocket? With gigantic cones, she has a total oil content to boot. That's literally what it says.
And then it says, it's also known as Nuggetzilla.
Oh, Nuggetzilla. Oh, I didn't know that.
Have you heard of Nuggetzilla?
Sure. Yeah, I've heard of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I don't...
You're a man of the world.
Well, I am. But I have heard of Nuggetzilla. Wow. Well, okay. So...
Pineapple... Pine and citrus.
And I've used Nugget. I've never used Zeus. I've never touched Zeus. And I don't have any idea what USDA 19058M is.
It's one of those experimental thingies.
Yeah.
That never got a name.
Right.
Never got a dinner.
That's
name
right.
That, name of that comedian.
What?
Never got a dinner.
I can't.
Red Buttons.
Oh.
From the Dean Martin roasts.
Right. Okay. I was mostly drunk during those years. So.
All right.
Okay.
So now's the time when we review our thoughts, make conjectures, and then reveal usually how wrong we are, although last time you got it 100% correct.
I did, and this time I won't because I honestly don't have a clue. I mean,
what?
I really don't. I mean, any one of these three could be any one of the three that we described, in my opinion. Well, I'm going to take my guesses. I have my ideas about it, but I have no confidence.
Huh.
And while I've brewed both with El Dorado and Galena, I've never brewed with Denali. But because I brewed beers that had other hops in them, I don't have a real sense of what to expect.
Well, I have some false confidence that is usually shattered about this time.
Yeah.
Okay, so we start with bottle cap number one. I think number one is going to be El Dorado. Just because I said watermelon, I said that I tasted watermelon, and watermelon was one of the descriptors.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I think that Denali is number three.
I think so, too. It's the most complex.
Wow. And that leaves Galena is number two.
We're together as number one being El Dorado. Number two is Galena.
Yeah.
Number three as Denali.
Denali. Oh, wow. And we're agreeing.
Yeah.
That's a little scary.
Yeah, well.
Well, we're not going to get any of these right.
All right. Number one.
Number one.
Is we want it to be El Dorado. What's it say? Denali.
Denali.
Ah.
Wow. I didn't get any pine nut out of it.
No.
I mean, I'm basing on what the description tells me it should be.
Hmm.
I actually thought I got some kind of nuttiness out of number three. Wow. Don't
okay,
tell number
so
three
what,
that.
Okay, so one wrong.
Okay.
Okay.
That means they're all wrong.
No, it doesn't.
Okay, so number two is supposed to be what? Number two is supposed to be Galena?
Yes.
Hey!
Galena.
We got that right.
Yeah. All right. So we got one out of three. Number three, just to make sure, is El Dorado.
You probably put Cascade in here.
Yeah, I put two of the one. No. El Dorado.
El Dorado. So we had El Dorado and Denali flipped, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Well,
El Dorado was my favorite of the three, but I want to stress that I didn't think that any of them were bad. Huh. You know, none of them were like, oh, I don't want that. I just think that the El Dorado had the most complete hop flavor. So I would only say that if you're going to brew a smash beer, maybe, that El Dorado would be a good choice.
Well, let me reread some of the descriptor here on El Dorado.
Okay.
And remember what we were talking about, fruity, a little bit piney and citrusy. Remember when we said all that stuff?
Yep.
This is in the description for El Dorado. It exhibits bold tropical fruit flavors, said to be reminiscent of pineapple and mango, in addition to a resinous back note.
That's
pretty much what we described when we were, you know, tasting those blind. So we were right.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Well,
you know, it's a fun exercise. I'm actually kind of struck at how similar they all are. They really are. They're different. Oh, boy, that sounded really stupid. You can tell them apart, but they're not so different as if we had Chinook, Sots and El Dorado.
Yeah, they're in the same family.
Definitely.
And maybe we need for the next episode, we need to pick hops that we have perceived as being way different in the past, that we have used different descriptors in the past.
Yeah.
Let's see if our taste buds are consistent and we can actually pick out these way different hops.
And I have another idea for a hop sampler. So I've been rereading Randy Mosher's Radical Brewing. Bluing. Sorry, Randy. Anyway, I was reading this passage where he talked about hop usage, and he was advocating for using noble hops, don't being afraid to use, say, 5 ounces of Fuggle or 5 ounces of Hallertauer, because there's a reason they're noble hops, and they will just taste better than the high alpha acid, newer version of them.
Huh.
So what I propose that we do is to take cultivars, you know, so take a low out, so take Sots, but then take a newer version, for lack of a better word, that's of a high alpha acid, get the IBUs lined up as best we can, knowing that we've been down that road.
And then we call it hop stand bittering units.
Well, but the idea is that to see if we really think that using, say, 3 or 4 times as much Hallertauer at 2% alpha acid is really better than using a similar hop profile that comes in at 10 or 11 or 8 or whatever. And seeing if we can tell the difference between a high alpha acid hop and the low traditional alpha acid hops used in appropriate amounts. Is that scary?
No, it sounds a lot like hop stand bittering units.
Well, I know that's a problem. But this was before I heard you talk about that.
Well, maybe also there's I've been thinking maybe we also do a thing where instead of just doing the hop stand, I do like a 30-minute boil.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then add a little bit at that beginning of the boil, and then load up the back end, so to speak. You know, so maybe we can switch it up a little bit. We'll talk about it. Maybe we'll have a beer sometime.
Maybe we will.
All right, Steve, this has been fun. We're 1 for 3, but boy, it's been fun. And I like El Dorado.
I
would like to play more with that. So.
Actually, I liked all three of these.
Yeah.
I didn't think any of them were bad. The only one that I can remember that I didn't care for, and I can't remember the name of the hop now, but there was one that we both went, oh, that's not good.
Yeah.
But
it was one of the early shows.
Yeah. But these were all nice. The hop character was nice in all three of them. El Dorado was my favorite.
Yeah. There you go.
All right.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, James.
Well, thanks again to Steve of Steve's Brew Shop. I've got in the fermenter now the next round, Saz, Cashmere, and Green Bullet. Looking forward to that. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check all that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. And check out our new basicbrewingshop.com. It's mobile-friendly. Got a great new deal on all of our DVDs in one combo, along with a free bottle opener, Basic Brewing bottle opener. We got our shirts all together in one space there. It's really cool. So check it out and let us know what you think of that at basicbrewingshop.com. That's all until next time. Till then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.